हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 73, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, chapter 13, Five Potent Forms of Devotional Service. The author describes the activities of the devotees, right? So this is in what section? This. Discerning body, mind, and dasyam, okay. The devotees of the Lord serve Him with their sinless bodies, meditating on Him within their minds, sing His holy names and characteristics with their voices, hear His names and qualities with their ears, and see His transcendental deity form with their eyes. In this way, the devotees perform all their constitutional and prescribed duties to the best of their ability, for the pleasure of the Lord, but they do not consider such activities as work. The devotees can become, because when you consider something as work, it's something that's not so nice. You do it because you have to. So they don't consider that this is something that they have to do. This is something that they want to do.
Right?
It's not an obligation. It's not an
obligation.
Yes. The devotees can become free from the bondage of karma if they mentally offer all their activities to Lord Krishna. Constantly remember Him. Regularly engage in His service. Do not desire any results. Follow the orders of the Lord without any material attachment, and offer the fruits of all their activities to Him. The servants of the Lord are equal to everyone. They surrender their minds to the Lord and engage in uncontaminated pure activities for His pleasure. Consequently, they do not become bound by the ropes of fruit of activities. The great personalities always endeavor to please the Lord with their bodies, minds, intelligence, senses, and speech. They become fully purified by engaging in religious activities that destroy the bondage of fruitive activities. Right? Because the only religious activities that destroy the bondage of fruitive activities is connecting it to the Lord, doing it for the Lord's pleasure. Right? Because karma, then, that's what keeps you in the cycle. But sadharma, that doesn't. It takes you beyond. Right, so they're performing religious activities, right? Because religious activities means that something has its nature. If you have an object, the object itself has its dharma. That's defined, right? Because something has what it does and how it acts. And if you act according to that nature, then something works out very well. So we know the human nature, the nature of the soul, is servant of Krishna. And the human nature is to elevate themselves from the material platform to the transcendental. Right? That's then the aspect. So, here then the religious activity means those activities that are recommended in Scripture according to how they're defined. Right? We're not making up our own systems. And so, that way they're engaged in recommended activities to please the Lord. Thus they serve the ocean of transcendental bliss, the most pleasing Sri Hari, with uninterrupted love. In this way, broad-minded devotees cleanse the contamination of their hearts by the great waves of Sri Hari's service. Then they become qualified to make friendship with Him. 10. The loving friendship towards Lord Hari and the characteristics of the devotees who are under the shelter of such friendship. The author now describes the characteristics of Sakyam. The great ecstatic friendship for Lord Vasudev, which is filled with an ocean of joy, is awakened in the hearts of the most faithful devotees, is called Sakyam, or which is awakened, or and is awakened. Those devotees who have surpassed the ocean of birth and death, even though they are mortal beings, are eligible to make friends with bliss personified, Sri Hari, in the spiritual world. So it's not just something you go and hang out. It's a matter of you've actually come to the liberated platform. Right? That's why I was saying before is that by following the previous one, by doing all your activities all just for Krishna's pleasure, that will bring you then to this platform. Sadhana brings you to Bhava. Right? So this isn't just something you take some of the external and then try, you know. Hey. The author now describes the characteristic of friendship. The friends of the Lord are fully satisfied, desireless, and always happy. They constantly offer their pure love to Lord Vasudeva. Instead of pleasing Sri Hari with their humility, fruit of activities, good qualities, best ingredients, or occupational duties, these great devotees simply please him with their affection. Right? Because the one is that it's service. They're taking everything that they have, using everything to serve the Lord. Right? So it's a matter of taking the forms of what situations they're in, connecting that to Krishna. So that's dasya, seeing themselves as servant. Right? So here it's just that affection is all that it is. Right? They perpetually enjoy pastimes with Sri Hari, the ocean of bliss, and are fully satisfied by seeing themselves as his friends. Due to being immersed in the ecstatic ocean of friendship with the Lord, these devotees become overwhelmed with affection for him. They earnestly surrender everything to the Supersoul, Sri Hari, who is like a great ocean of transcendental bliss. Okay. Then, Section 11. Total surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Hari by offering everything to him and being fully absorbed in him. The glory, symptoms, and unique position of the surrendered persons. The author now describes the characteristics of Atmanivedana. The attainment of the desired goal of the devotees is called Atmanivedana. It is achieved when their bodies are fully surrendered to Sri Krishna and they are totally devoid of the mentality of I and mine. Full surrender is not attained by other processes of sadhana, and even the best of yogis rarely attain it. Full surrender is known as supreme transcendental devotional service, and it is the state of liberation for those who are living in the material world. Atmanivedana is not obtained by following the instructions of the spiritual master or by studying the scripture, right? So it's not by some technique or some activity. Right? The devotees simply have to realize full surrender, which is self-manifested within their hearts. Right? So they have a mood, they just surrender to Krishna fully. That's what it is. It's not that there's some technique or some austerity or some sadhana. So it's not attained by that. Yes.
Can you say it is attained by the grace of Krishna?
It's by the grace of Krishna, yes. Yes. But the point is you're fully engaged in his service, but it's not that you can do some technique and get it. You know, it's just like, okay, how do you become the temple president? Right? There's some technique.
Yes.
You know? Does that make sense?
Yes.
But for this, it doesn't have a technique. It's just surrender. Right? So we saw the last one is just that affection, and that affection just has that aspect of full surrender. So you're engaging everything in Krishna's service, then you have that affection, then there's that complete surrender.
And you summarize it is a come when it is the real nature.
Yes, when it's the actual nature of the soul. That's why I was saying you can't force it. It's just natural. So you engage yourself in all the activities. So we practice sadhana. What we should know is that this is where it's taking us. Right? Does that make sense? So we become purified. So then we're qualified to actually have that attitude. Does that make sense? That's why we say the sahajiyas, it's just so cheap, because they just act as if they're fully surrendered to Krishna's friend or these kinds of things. But they don't have the purity, they don't have the dedication. They haven't given up sense gratification, let alone I and mine. Okay. The author further describes full surrender. A fully surrendered soul does not think about work for or search after his own personal benefit. He fully surrenders his mind to the Supersoul, Sri Hari, and constantly enjoys in the ocean of his own spiritual happiness. The devotees become free from the ocean of material existence, which is born from the three modes of material nature, when they drown themselves in the unlimited nectarian ocean of Sri Hari. It's just anything about Krishna, they're just absorbed in that. And that takes them to the transcendental platform. From that time, they do not care about the happiness derived from merging into the Brahman effulgence, nor following the rules and regulations of the Vedas, right? Because if you follow the rules and regulations of the Veda, you get certain benefits. Like that. So they're not worried about that. They just are worried about absorption in the Lord. Rather, everywhere they look, they perceive only Sri Krishna, who is the personification of complete bliss. Such persons may reside in one place or wander here and there out of their own will. Since they are fully satisfied by knowledge of the Supersoul, Sri Hari, they wander about, detached, inert, and without companions. Because they're already with the Lord, so they don't need... If they're with other persons who are on the same transcendental position, then they're associated with those devotees. They don't need a companion because they get bored or lonely or need assistance or things like that. Right?
Like
Sukadeva Goswami. That's specifically mentioned. He was just wandering about in his free will. You know, it's just some old piece of cloth, he puts that on, you know, like that. That's it. They don't worry about these things. The author further describes this subject. Those who naturally chant the holy names and characteristics of Sri Hari become fully satisfied due to attaining their desired goal. It appeared that the incessant flow of their spontaneous spiritual happiness is forcibly ejected from their bodies on the pretext of laughing, and is sweated from the bodies on the pretext of the bodily hair standing on end. So these just things happen naturally. They don't have to go backstage, put some chilies up their nose. You know, they don't have to do any of that kind of stuff. Part 12. While describing knowledge as subordinate to devotional service, the author explains how performance of the nine types of devotional service control Krishna. The author's realization about the Lord's position as the non-dual personality of Godhead and the symptoms and results of pure knowledge. In summarizing his description of devotional service, the author now explains that knowledge is subordinate to and dependent on bhakti. Right? These are all Bhakti Vinod Thakur, right? All this is his, or who's writing it? Oh, I see. So someone's compiled his teaching. Who? He wrote it himself.
It's a book.
Yeah. I'm just imagining that if you're in middle school and you wrote something using this technique, where you talk about how the author is going to write this now and this, what would the teacher have said? Would they have accepted it, or they would get all grumpy? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that writing, you can do all these things. You know, so...
Even my Guru Goswami also follows that in the standard. In the beginning of the prayer, it is he who wrote, the author writes.
The author writes, poem. Yeah. Because they don't write about themselves, because they say, you know, it's like...
But I just remove it from the format so that we can...
Yeah. No, it's a natural position.
No, is it connected this presentation with when devotees say we in the name of Premendra Parampara? Is it the same?
Yeah, can be. It's just you're not directly referring to yourself. It's considered more cultured. But here it's even they take it to, you know, the author. They don't even say we, they don't even say the name, they just say it like that. So it's even a more element of not having this, you know, identifying so much with the mundane position and all that. You know, others call him by his name or his position or that, but he's not absorbed in that.
There's no I in mind.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting method. And then after this, then giving commentary. Yeah. If you did that, then you have all the things.
Krishna does the same thing about everything.
Yeah, he's always talking. Like when he's talking to he's talking to Arjuna and telling about you should surrender to that supreme Lord who's known as Paramatma, like that. Yeah, so it's just a because Krishna likes the hidden aspect. It's tasty. It's more fun. More cultural. In summarizing his description of devotional service, The author now explains that knowledge is subordinate to and dependent on bhakti. Right, so now he's going to summarize the devotional. He's given an introduction, gave the nine processes, and now he's going to give a summary of that. Joyful persons regularly engage in nine types of devotional service, namely, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, worshipping, offering prayers, serving as a servant, serving as a friend, and fully surrendering everything unto the Lord. Right, so joyful persons regularly engage in nine types. So they're always engaged. People who are not joyful, irregularly engaged, or occasionally engaged. Because the point is when the joyful you engage, and when you're not joyful you tend to not engage, or sometimes depending on what kind of not, then it makes you think of Krishna and then engage. But it also can make you not engage. Right? They easily control Sri Krishna by their own strength without the help of any mantra or remedy. Transcendental, because it's done by their affection, right? Transcendental knowledge automatically manifests in the pure hearts of non-envious persons who travel on this path of devotional service. They consider the material world to be illusory, just as in the darkness one mistakenly considers a rope to be a snake. These enlightened persons are able to understand the absolute truth, the Supreme Brahman, who is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. When this transcendental knowledge is awakened in the devotees' hearts, the varieties of material energies are no longer visible, and the path of attachment, the path of detachment, are immediately destroyed. So karma and jnana. Because karma is the path of attachment. Because you're attached, that's why you follow the regulations and get the results. Now you offer that to Krishna, then that's karma yoga. Or path of detachment means you're giving up anything that's not actually essential. Does that make sense? Both you're dealing with the material energy, but one you're looking at what benefits you'll get, and one looks at where you aren't getting benefits, you know? So they're trying to make it less. But both of those are given up, because then it's just what's nice for Krishna. Right? At that time, only the eternal, blissful, effulgent, pure, and complete Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with His spiritual parts and parcels, the living entities, whose natures are similar to His, remain eternally manifest. Because right? That's then when you're seeing on that eternal transcendental platform. In this world, only the Supreme Lord, who is eternal, immeasurable, inexhaustible, and complete, exists. Because right, that's what we were saying before. There is only the Lord and His energies, and all this is eternal. Manifestations of it will be temporary. See, the problem is here. See, you have variety here, right? And that's a reflection of right in the spiritual world. So the variety here, because it changes and things end, what you see is if it changes and it's favorable, then we're comfortable with it. Because what's happening if there's a change and we're comfortable with it? What are we in the past, present, or future? Present, right? Because it's there and there's a variety and you just stay in the present. It doesn't bother you. Now, when there's change and it bothers you, then you're in the past and then you think about the future. So we're affected by material time. In the spiritual world, there's no material time. It's just the present. There may be a concept of these other things. Just for, you know, yesterday we did this, you know, like that. But it's that they're always in the present. They're not somewhere else. Because Krishna is everything eternally, so there is no past or future. It's all Krishna. Does that make sense? So Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains that they accomplish everything by the present. So you don't even need a memory as such. Because it's about what's happening right now, what you would do now. That spontaneous service to what's happening now. Right? Because we think of the past so that we can, you know, what should I do in this situation? Right? I look back at my previous samskaras. And then what are the impressions? So how does that apply to the present? Right? Because I don't know, because I want to know how can I get something from this? But there it's just about that spontaneous attraction for Krishna. So as the various situations come up, is how to serve Krishna in those moments. So there's no need of past. Does that make sense?
And it's always fresh.
It's always fresh. So that variety there is always in the present. Well, for us, we're thinking of variety in the past because it's not so great now. It wasn't so great then, but with time you kind of forget about it. You know?
But now if we can, come closer to that being in the present, like now in the past.
Yes, but you can only actually be in the present in the mode of goodness.
Yes.
So this I'm okay, you're okay is not exactly in the mode of goodness. So therefore it's not going to work. And then to actually get that full, what they're talking here, that's pure goodness. Because they don't see anything separate from Krishna. They only see the spirit, Krishna and his energies. So they only see transcendental. That's what Prabhupada meant, that they move through the world. They don't see what we see. Right? They see what it means, whatever the forms are, and that, but they're seeing it all connected to Krishna and remembering Krishna and his energies. Well, we're seeing, how is this good for me? How this is not good for me? Right? Like that. In this world, only the Supreme Lord, who is eternal, immeasurable, inexhaustible, and complete, exists. But dormant, foolish persons see the Lord as the three worlds. Right? They see the three worlds as like that. When they attain full knowledge of the Lord, instead of perceiving land, water, fire, air, ether, demigods, human beings, activities, and time, they perceive only the Supreme Brahman everywhere. That it's all Brahman, it's all Krishna's. It has the variety. This impersonal philosophy of the Mayavadis, where it's voidism, it's Buddhism, it's not Vedic, it's not real. There's no such thing as just nothing. So the Brahmavadis, they see everything, they've just come to that platform. They're liberated. They see everything as Brahman, so everything is the Supreme. They just don't know that that Supreme's a person. Right? But for the devotees, they see here, and they remember the person. Right? Or they're just absorbed in the person, whatever. It's like that. Does that make sense? So others they see as the three worlds, and then you have to connect it to Krishna. Then others just see just the three worlds and no Krishna. Right? And then as you come down, there's no three worlds, there's just this world. And then it gets lower than it's my world, right? And at the bottom, then I think it's Wayne's world, right? You know, so then you really got a problem. Yeah? So you want to avoid that. You want to keep yourself up a few levels from that. Okay? So this is, so then they just can. The absolute non-dual supersoul is naturally as clear as a crystal. Just as a crystal appears different due to different conditions in which it is situated. Similarly, the Supreme Lord appears different due to the seer's different qualities. Just as air is present within a room, a pitcher, and a hall. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is present in water, land, fire, the sky, as well as in Brahma and an ant. So it's all, you can see everything connected to him. We see that's what they're discussing in 11th canto, 11th and 12th. It's all the way through. You see it's much more emphasized here. So these are the points. I mean, this is what this is the point. It's not that, oh, I'm going down to the Jamuna, I'm going to get some water, and then all this and that, and telling all your friends, and, you know, we're not, this is what we're talking about. Yeah. The Supreme Lord, who is naturally pure and absolute, has manifested the material world through false ego, through the total material elements, and through his illusory energy. Ornaments like earrings, bangles, and bracelets are made of gold, and are therefore non-different from gold. A pitcher and a brick are made of clay, and are therefore non-different from clay. Similarly, the material world is non-different from the Supreme Lord. Know this fact for certain. Maya means ignorance of this fact. When you know that, then you're not dealing with Maya. You're dealing with this, okay, this thing has its nature, it's Krishna, it's that, and how to engage that in Krishna's service. Right? So it means it's according to the nature that it inherently has, because it's non-different from Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So even if we're saying, oh, we're not from India, we're Westerners, but where does the Western mentality come from? Even Krishna's created that. Right? So even this idea, no, we are this. No, we're not. It means you may be, but the thing that you say is, it's actually Krishna. You understand? So that's the thing, is this ignorance that Maya means we're ignorant of that it's all connected to Krishna. And so it's not that, oh, it's connected to Krishna, now I can do whatever I want with my stuff. No, we've gone beyond that here. It means it's Krishna, therefore you're going to engage it that's personally pleasing to Krishna as a person. It's subjective to him, not subjective to us. Right? Notice how we're objective about everybody else and subjective about ourselves. It means I have never met a nuclear physicist that's not subjective about himself. They're insanely subjective in their own thing. Everybody else is totally objective. Anything that anybody else says, oh, it's subjective. You have to make it objective. But what they think, feel, what they need. So this kind of thing is not actually very scientific, despite the popularity of it. So we have to be very, very clear that Maya means ignorance, that everything is the Lord, everything's non-different from the Lord, therefore everything has to be used in the Lord's service. And for these devotees, they do it joyfully, naturally, automatically. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, if we evaluate our life and ours and see when we are connected to that or not.
For us, we have to look at the other end of the book, down this side, you know. So when it mentions about Huni Kirata, you know, and all them, that's where we're given the honorable mention. That's end of the book. Does that make sense?
But it's quite a big lesson of training for us, this studying.
Yes, yes. So the point is we know that it's there, it's possible, it's there, they're talking about it, and it's always joyful, it's blissful. We're thinking, oh, that's the thing. What gets in the way is this I and mine, not seeing things connected to Krishna, all these things. And yes, we deal with it, but what to do? Then it mentions, you just hear and chant, you follow the process, the sadhana, it will bring you up to that position. You just have to have that faith that this position, this is what's going to work. Something else is not going to work. Does that make sense? Just as the sun appears to be many suns. Right? Does that make sense? When we make these strong comments, that's about positions that are being presented as advanced or standard, which are not. You find for the general devotee, that innocence that is there, they just follow and do what they can, and they also know I'm not so advanced. If they're attached, they know they're attached. But the problem comes with a false ego that they're attached and they try to make, they get in your face about it. You know, you got a problem with that? It's like, I don't have a problem, but, you know, Bhakti Devi might have a problem, but, hey, that's between you and her. What do I got to do with it, right? You know.
Without the association of advanced devotee, we cannot come to that level.
No. That's why we have to always be associating. That's why it's mentioned you hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. So then we're hearing about how the Lord, the devotees, these other advanced, the acharyas, and then like this, and then hear others, and then see how they're working, and everything like that. Wow. Okay. No. It's just okay. Just as the sun appears to be many suns when it is reflected on in various objects, such as ghee or water. Similarly, Lord Vasudeva appears to be many when perceived through the modes of material nature. The bewildered person thinks there's just so many different things. But the person of knowledge knows that there's only one sun that's reflected in all these. So therefore, it's Krishna. He's reflected in everything. And with his jivas, and those jivas are his energy. So it's not a oneness. It's a matter of him, the person. And we're a person. And everybody else is a person. All this energy is also then connected to Krishna. And then it's just a matter of expressing that position of us as a person to Krishna as a person. So here that aspect of the oneness acts to bring it to the personal. So when you take the oneness to try to bring it to impersonal, that's nonsense, because it doesn't exist. Right? Because even the Brahma body, it's all one, but there's all this unlimited variety. But saying it's all one and nothing exists, or there's no variety, that's just, where does that happen? Even though we would like to say in between that Maya body's ears, that might be where the vacuum is. We know as a fact there is still space in there, you know, even though there's nothing else in there. You know, so it's not exactly a total void. So it's this, you know. Does that make sense? That's in the jnanis. In the karmis, they have one little dried pea in there rolling around. Like that. So that's how you tell the difference. The karmi's head rattles because the pea rolls around, and the jnani's head doesn't because it's just ether. Right? Yeah. If you ever wanted to know the technique for telling the difference, like that.
I should say that in modern science we have the notion of dark matter.
Dark matter, yes. Yes. Dark matter, yeah. Only a bewildered person considers such reflected forms as real. Only the Supersoul is eternal. Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord, which is subordinate to the Lord, appears factual due to ignorance. But it means as a fact, means separate from the Lord. It means her position is just as the energy of the Lord. That's the reality. But if we see is that she's all these things, the Lord is all these things. He does that through his energy. Nescience has no actual existence. Therefore, how can the worlds that are born of nescience have existence? Right? Nescience means if you have ignorance. The point is that not seeing the Lord in everything, that's ignorance. Ignorance has no existence. Right? So anything born of that nescience has no existence. So the idea, I'll work, I'll be happy, I'll get money, I'll have friends, and, you know, all these different things. Does that make sense? So that doesn't exist because it's based on a non-existent principle. Right? So that's the same way with the others. They say this world's an illusion. But it's here, so that means that the spiritual is something opposite that. So the opposite of existence is non-existence. If something doesn't exist, how can it be there? And if this world is non-existent, you're basing this world is here, it's giving me pain and all that, so therefore transcendental must be the opposite. So the logic to come to the idea that the spiritual world is the opposite of the material world means this has variety, there has no variety. It's based on illusion, because they say the material world's illusion. So if it's based on illusion, how can it have any fact? You know what I'm saying? So their whole logic doesn't have any meaning. So that means the materialist, whether they're karmi or jnani, the basis of their whole understanding won't give any results because it's illusory, therefore the results that it'll give will be illusory. Right?
Like it's very important to discriminate first what is spiritual matter.
Yes.
Do like that.
Yes. That's that first verse of Bhagavatam, and that's why it's Gayatri. It's establishing the supreme. Right? That's truth.
It's all Maya.
Because what it means if you're basing a truth on an illusion, then how is that going to be there? It means truth's based on truth. Right. Yeah. Therefore, how can the worlds that are born of nescience have existence? When one's knowledge is awakened, one can perceive the three worlds as Lord Vasudeva. Just as flowers in the sky are an illusion, so their fragrance is also an illusion. Right? If the flowers in the sky are an illusion, the fragrance of those flowers in the sky are an illusion. Right?
Happiness is illusion.
Huh?
Happiness is illusion.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it's just like you're thinking, yes, I'm going to go here, and in your mind, I'm going to be so happy and all that. So that happiness is gained on something that's all just making it up in the mind. It's all, it doesn't exist. That's right, when you get there, then you're surprised. Why I'm not happy?
Why I come here?
Yeah. Yes. Just as a mirage in the desert is an illusion, so its coolness is also an illusion. Similarly, just as nescience is an illusion, the three worlds which are born of nescience are also an illusion. Right? So the devotees, they see everything as Krishna. So it's Krishna has taken the form of the three worlds. That's why it's real. But to think that they're real on their own is not real. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of transcendental knowledge, is the only enjoyer. Apart from him, nothing else exists. Because of ignorance, the illusory material world appears to be independent of the absolute truth. When one's knowledge of the absolute truth is awakened, one can again see this world as a product of the world's external energy. Right? So then you can see it's the Lord, it's all the Lord, but the Lord and his energy are non-different, so he's pervading by his energy. But that doesn't mean he as a person doesn't know all that. People become liberated from material bondage and attain spiritual happiness by constantly realizing the one unlimited transcendental, pure and complete absolute truth, who is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Right? So that's the meaning he's non-dual. It's all him. Right? Such persons will never enter into the womb of a mother again. The devotees of the Lord obtain the nectar of knowledge from the ocean of material existence by churning it with the Mandara mountain in the form of devotional service. Thus they become free from hunger, thirst, lamentation, fear, heat, cold, poverty, and dreaming. Okay, we're right now working on the heat one. Right? Yes. They take pleasure only in the Supreme Brahman, who is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Okay, that's good. Right, so he sees from hearing these refined points of philosophy as they come up, now we can discern here how everything the Lord, how it's personal. While we've been conditioned previously on the material platform that everything's one, that means impersonal. But everything one is personal. And then everything different is personal. So there is only personal. It's the original. Right? Does that make sense? Because if you're going to do something, then you need facility. Let's say Louis wants to go out onto the lawns of Versailles, and he wants to take, you know, his close family and friends, his associates, and they want to do something, you know, go for a walk, have a picnic, or something like that. So the whole point is the interaction with his associates, right? So now to do that, then there's going to be servants around, right? The head of house, all these different things like that. And so they'll go make the arrangements. They want to have a picnic. That means someone has to go arrange the area, right? Louis's not going to put down the blanket. Right? He's not going to bring the food. He's not going to do all that stuff. They're going to do it. But the experience is just he's going with his family and friends. They go to the spot. They just sit down. Everything's arranged. They interact like that. When it's finished, they get up. They, you know, if they wash their hands, they do. If not, whatever they do. Then they get up and they wander off. But it's not that the stuff stays out there and then all the deer that live out there in the park, they eat it all and have fun. Right? You understand? So that's the whole point, is the personal is the original. Then all these other expansions through that potency or energy of you know, in this case, Louis, means all his servants and all that, because he has power, he has money, and all this kind of thing, it all happens. So that's the point, is Krishna there with his Ichashakti, he's enjoying within the realm of the Ichashakti. Then from there, that expands. Right? The Kriya and Jnana, they take care of everything. Does that make sense?
It's automatic.
It's automatic. Because they're his servants. They just fulfill the desire. So he's one. But at the same time, he's many. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the devotee just sees like that. And because of that, there is no illusion. Therefore, there's no illusion. There's nothing to that you would separate you from being always engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Conclusion 13. Oh my Lord, although I am a fool, unqualified, and full of false ego, I have attempted to describe the most confidential devotional service. Though I consider this attempt to be the perfection of my mind and speech, still I consider it an offense. Right? To be engaged in this topics of describing the Lord, the devotees, and devotional service is the perfection of the mind and speech. But because he's feeling he's a fool, unqualified, full of false ego, that his trying to describe this, though he's unqualified, that's the offense. What we see is that, you know, that's just that element of the devotees, that they're prideless. Was it near Matsaranam? Yeah, they are prideless. Right. Oh, ocean of mercy, please forgive me for my offense. So we see that surrender, that. Oh Lord, I have not heard your glories, worshipped your lotus feet, nor have I seen or meditated on your eternal form. Rather, I have neglected your divine instructions, and have simply followed the rules and regulations of the Vedic literatures. Therefore, please forgive me for my shameful request. Oh Krishna, please be kind to me. So, to make the point, even though we're just absorbed in the Vaidhi and doing all those kind of things like that, and generally for the benefits we'll particularly get from them, like that, the exodus is that, but still, he's ashamed for request, please still be kind to me, that I may develop pure devotional service. Because by that, then these things won't be there. Oh Lord, if sinful persons, even after committing hundreds of offenses, cultivate devotional service to you due to good fortune, right, so by the association of devotees, all their sinful reactions are immediately vanquished. On the other hand, if proud persons, even after performing hundreds of pious activities and possessing all good qualities, do not cultivate devotional service to you, all their pious activities simply become sins. Right, because all that, it'll just become pride and this and that, and then they'll have all this, they'll be distracted and just turn into sinful life. Does that make sense? You know, it's just, you see that in history. It's just how it works. Someone's there, they work very hard, they're very austere, they get facility and all that, then that same facility just turns into sin. Right? That's all, you just see it over and over again. Right? So that's the difficulty of the piety, of just engaging in piety without Krishna consciousness. Right? Means engaging in sin without Krishna consciousness, of course, is useless. But piety without Krishna consciousness also, because it'll just turn into sin. Yes.
Daksha.
Yes. Because then now he's criticizing the Vaishnavas and doesn't understand the position of the Lord. Thinks he's somebody very special. Like that. Yeah, so like that. So I think he didn't invite Shiva. But he also just didn't say anything to Brahma, because he was also kind of agreeing that, you know, you have to be, you know, he's your brother, right, like that. So he didn't invite him. So he invited everybody else. Didn't work out so good. Vishnu didn't come, you know, so. Yeah, it's a good example. He's so pious, but then it just turns into impiety. Because when you get up to the pinnacle of piety, the top of the samsara, then from there it goes down. And then you get to the bottom, can't go any farther down, so then the only alternative is to go back up again, right? Okay. Yeah, Daksha is a good example. Pure devotional service does not depend on austerity, noble birth, bodily strength, good qualities, yogic perfection, appropriate time, cultivation of knowledge, study of the Vedas, or performance of pious activities. Like, it's always that thing is that, oh no, but right now is not the best time, a little bit later. No. Every time is the best time for devotional service. Right? Yeah. Sober person should therefore give up all other endeavors and happily engage in devotional service. Right? So just because you're not doing anything but service to Krishna. So engaging body, mind, and words means body has a nature, mind has a nature, words have a nature. They're engaged according to their nature in Krishna's service.
Yeah. It seems that this point comes a few times. The important thing is sober, to be sober.
Sober, yes. Yes, yes. That's why we say no intoxication. Otherwise, you won't be sober. It just means thoughtful. If you're sober, you're thoughtful. You think about things. You see things, you know, without all the emotions, you know, attachments and aversion and all that. You see things, you know, in a more balanced way. So then they're like that. So they're looking at the material world. They're not seeing it according to what's nice, not what's good, what's service for Krishna. So they're sober.
And we can become sober by association with the
sober. Yes, yes. But it means that we see is you give up the false identity. Because that illusion or that madness, it also goes to also sometimes called false ego.
Yes. Yes.
Right, that's why you see in the list of the six, sometimes that most all of them are the same.
Yes.
But that one that's dealing with this, sometimes it's called illusion, sometimes madness, sometimes it's called false ego, sometimes it's called pride.
Yes.
Right? It'll have all these different things. So as that goes, then we're sober. Because otherwise, when that pride is there, that's when we behave in ways that aren't good. Sober means we're thoughtful, so then we'll behave thoughtfully.
Krishna also depends.
Okay, he's unaffected by it. He sees things. Okay, yeah. Yes, nice. Yes. Okay. May this Sri Hari Bhakti Kalpa Latika increase the happiness of kind-hearted devotees. It is the mother of knowledge because it helps one realize the absolute truth. This book is full of enchanting qualities which constantly supply ingredients for love of God. Right? So these are constantly things that you can remember the Lord from. It bestows spiritual happiness and destroys all miseries. Though it is not decorated with many ornaments, it is very delightful and dear to the great soul. Right? Because it's about Krishna. So therefore, it's very nice.
What is the meaning of Kalpa Latika?
Latika is a creeper. And Kalpa, you know Kalpa? You know Kalpa? No Kalpa? No?
Desire-fulfilling creeper.
Desire-fulfilling creeper. The desiring, fulfilling, devotional creeper about Sri Hari. Yeah, I always have really nice names. Okay, so Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Study Guide Part 5, Chapters 14 to 16. So 14, devotional qualifications. 15, spontaneous devotional service. 16, spontaneous devotional service. Further described. Okay. Oh, okay. 16.
Why the sadhana? Radhana is a sadhana.
Yeah, but it's still sadhana.
Yes.
So this is still the second part.
Mm.
And so then 17, 18, I think, is bhava, and 19 is prema. So those are, so that 17, 18 will be part 3, and 19 will be part 4, or wave 4.
Yes.
Okay. Chapter 14, devotional qualifications. 1, 2, 2, 48. Jnana and Vairagya are suitable for entering bhakti, being somewhat useful in the beginning of bhakti, but they are not considered angas of bhakti. They're useful to use, but they're not angas of bhakti. You know, it's just like, let's say, a grater. It's useful in cooking, but it's not part of cooking. You know, you have techniques of cooking. Those are part, but the grater is not. Right? It helps in preparing and making the field. But in the actual cooking, it's not part of the process. Srila Prabhupada. Some scholars recommend that knowledge and renunciation are important factors for elevating oneself to devotional service. But actually, that is not a fact. Actually, the cultivation of knowledge or renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning, but ultimately they may also come to be rejected, for devotional service is dependent on nothing other than the sentiment or desire for such service. It requires nothing more than sincerity. Right? That's what it requires. So, in the beginning, we have all these things, yes, yes, all these things I need my money, I need my this, I need that, but then you see with time it may not be so important. You know, or the knowledge, and I have so much knowledge I can do, and I can do so many things, okay, in the beginning that's okay. But then the point is then what is it about? You know, then renunciation, it was detached and all that, but then when it comes to doing things for Krishna, then it becomes a problem because you don't want to do anything because you're renounced. So for the beginning, it's useful. It may be useful, say. But the point is it's not a fact. It won't elevate you. That's the whole point. It's very important. No, it will not elevate you. Or the contemporary, kind of, it's always been there, but the modern kind of concepts of good qualities and nice social good qualities and nice social position and standing and respect, that will bring about nice devotional service. That also is part, but actually that's not a fact. It means they can, in the beginning, can be engaged in Krishna's service, but they're not angas of bhakti. They're not part of bhakti. It's just you're engaging it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that sincerity of wanting to please Krishna, that's all that's required. You have that, you advance. The others, you have so much technical knowledge and skill and renunciation and good qualities, you may not advance if you're not sincere. Because if you're thinking, these are the things. Right? Yeah.
To develop sincerity, we need to give up all the bad qualities.
Yes. You have to associate with those who are sincere.
Yes.
Like that. So that's the...
And to give up envy for people.
Yes. But you have to be sincere in giving it up. Because like Bhaktivinoda Thakura is praying, I don't have any of these good qualities, so shamelessly I'm asking for your mercy. Because it's only his mercy. It's not that, okay, here's the trick. I'm a rat bag. The trick is just, ask Krishna and everything's cool. No, so you actually have to surrender to Krishna. There is no alternative. Srila Jiva Goswami. Jnana here refers to realization of Tvam Padartha, Jiva, Tad Padartha, Brahman, and finally realization of there was oneness, Tattvam Asi. This is called Brahman Jnana, consisting of three stages. The word ishat, somewhat, means that the knowledge of Jiva and Brahman are useful, but realization of oneness should be rejected. Right? So when they come to the point of the oneness, that oneness is only important if Jiva and Brahman still remain as individuals. So then looking at the subjective nature of Brahman and Jiva on the transcendental platform, that oneness then has a use. So we see we go beyond this. That's why that it may detach you from the material world, but if you don't go beyond it, it's going to be a problem. Vairagya in this verse means the type of renunciation that is useful only for Brahma Jnana. Right? But that renunciation of the results of karma, they're not involved in karma. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, they're so renounced they can't do anything. Mm-hmm. So then it gets in the way. Mm-hmm. That part of vairagya, which is contrary to bhakti, should also be rejected. That is the meaning of ishat in relation to vairagya, jnana, and vairagya. Mm-hmm. Oh, in relation to vairagya. Jnana and vairagya are somewhat useful only in the beginning of bhakti. They're somewhat useful because if you would connect it to bhakti, but it's not that it itself brings you to bhakti. I was so intelligent, I was a seeker, and that's why I took up devotional service. No, that's not at all. Never going to happen. There's some sincerity in wanting to know Krishna. That's why you come in contact with the devotees. That's why someone else who isn't as smart is becoming a devotee also. Right? That makes sense, yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, then everybody would be, you know, only PhDs would come to Krishna consciousness. You know how you say. Then our phrase would be, oh, what about this Krishna consciousness? We say, first get your PhD, then we'll talk. Right? But it's not like that. It's sincerity. So if someone's sincere in their intelligence, someone's sincere in their sentiments, someone's sincere in their anxiety, whatever it is, it works. That means they are suitable only at the stage of giving up attachment to other objects. Means that are not, in other words, if your detachment keeps you from getting involved in things that are not useful for Krishna, then it's useful. But when it gets in the way of things that are useful for Krishna and you're still detached from it and won't get, then it's a problem. When attachments have been given up and a person begins practicing bhakti, jnana and vairagya become insignificant. Also, after beginning bhakti, thinking of these processes will distract a person from bhakti. Thus, they are useful only in the very beginning of bhakti. So it's just a matter of being what is useful for bhakti. That's all.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Samavaita Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitya Gaura Prabhu.